The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We've been discussing the phylum Mollusca. There are three of the classes in the phylum that are of little significance, and we have passed over them rather quickly. We spent some time on the last program discussing snails, the gastropods, the stomach-footed organisms. And on this program, I'd like for us to think a little bit about the so-called bivalves. My preferable name for them is Pelecypoda. Pelecypode, Pelecypods literally means hatchet-footed. Bivalve means two valves, obviously, and the valves are simply referring to shells. So these organisms are mollusks which have two shells. And again, they are a large group. They're important for a number of reasons. Food being one obvious example. Most people, I think, would probably eat some varieties, if not many, of the bivalves. My comment has been on occasion that the first person to eat a oyster had to be a very brave person. And I also comment occasionally that if you're willing to eat an oyster, you ought not to fuss about anything else. Now, I happen to enjoy eating oysters, particularly if they're fried. I was very much disappointed when I made an attempt, or not an attempt, when I ate my first raw oyster. I ate two at that time, my first one and my last one, not because I'm opposed to it particularly, but they really didn't have much taste. But oysters, of course, are eaten as food staple for many. Clams, we'll talk a little bit about freshwater clams shortly, which are a tremendously endangered species in the United States. One of the bivalves that is very desirable as food in the eyes of many are the scallops, the pectens. I wish it were possible to show you a video of the movement of scallops in the water. They clap their shells together almost like a bird swimming. The first time I saw it, I couldn't believe I was watching what I was seeing. This shellfish with clapping its two clams and moving around through the water, very similar to the way some of the fish fly. But the particular thing I want to bring to your attention about the scallops is that there are some of the group who, among other things, have 24 vertebrate-type eyes along the mantle. Now, there are numbers of organisms, number of phyla that have eyes, but there are not many that have vertebrate-type eyes. And this, of course, has led to a rather amusing discussion about how these evolved. If you follow the evolutionary interpretation of homology and there are 24 type vertebrate type eyes, this is more than people have. People only have two. So you can look on this as meaning that people are simply degenerate scallops. We have devolved from the scallops in some way. This is in jest. I hope you understand. But it still is a problem for the evolution. Where did they come from? Where did bivalve mollusks get vertebrate-type eyes? And from an evolutionary standpoint, there simply is no good answer to the question. Again, I'm not aware of any organisms that are generally agreed on by the evolutionists as being ancestral to the bivalves, although there are some that will attempt to provide examples, but certainly nothing that anybody would agree on. But in addition to that, to have those 24 vertebrate type eyes, in my opinion, poses an immense problem. The shells of these animals, of course, are calcium carbonate. They are also interesting. Well, freshwater clams, of course, can form pearls, which is interesting. They're not as valuable as those in the marine organisms, but they're formed on occasion. And what happens, in any case, there is a material which is secreted by the clam. If there is a grain of sand or a piece of shell or something else that gets wedged into the oyster or the shellfish between the mantle and the shell, the shellfish's way of handling that is simply to begin to secrete layers of this nacreous material around it. Over a period of time, it can be fairly sizable. These are what we know as pearls, and pearls, of course, are immensely valuable. They vary in color. Pick almost any color you want, and there are pearls like that. Mikimoto, the company in Japan, introduced and popularized cultured pearls, where you will take spherical pieces of shell, embed those in the oysters, and leave them for a determined period of time so that there are a number of layers of the pearly material that are secreted around it, then go in and remove it. And you get sizable pearls much more rapidly than you would if you were simply depending on those that are found in nature. And also, you can regulate them much more easily. You never really know quite what you're going to find in nature. And Australia recently has developed a rather large cultured pearl industry, which is a fairly important competitor now with Japan. The freshwater clams at one time were very abundant and diverse in freshwater, certainly in running streams anywhere in the United States, especially the eastern United States. The information I'm reading is that there at one time were some 300 species of them. Of these, 12 are now extinct, 42 are listed as threatened or endangered, and as many as 88 more may soon be listed so. And the primary difficulty here apparently is simply the quality of water that is available to them. Some of the clams are very sensitive organisms, and the water must be pure or they're not going to do well. So pollution and sedimentation have been problems that have caused the extinction and the danger to some of these. While we're talking about these, I guess it might be just as well to talk about the zebra mussels. These are organisms that were apparently introduced into the United States in ballast water from ships in Europe. The veligers are the immature stages, one of the immature stages of the clams. And apparently the ships would simply pump in ballast water in Europe, come over and pump it out. And beginning in the 1980s, 86 comes to mind, these were dumped in freshwater ports here and expelled primarily into Lake Huron and Lake Erie. By 1990, they had spread throughout the Great Lakes. By 1994, they had made their way all the way down to New Orleans. And they're as far north as Duluth, Minnesota, far east on the Hudson River in New York. These things will attach themselves to any firm surface. They are about an inch long, as I recall, 4 centimeters, 2-3 inches at the most. They are phyto. They feed on phytoplankton, algae. They're filter feeders, and they will simply attach themselves to any firm surface and then begin to feed. And the problem has been that they reproduce easily, and large numbers can build up very rapidly, and are going to foul the water intake of pipes, particularly in municipal water plants and in industrial supplies as well. And I don't know that there is any particular damage, but the fact is they just impede the water flow and impede it to the point, in some cases, that it's very difficult to get the amounts of water that are necessary. One author has made the comment that by, well, I presume it was by 2000, that the cost of controlling these things is going to get to be about $5 billion a year. So you have a good example here of one of the organisms that did not particularly cause any difficulty in its native state, was transported to another place, and now is causing immense problems here. Some of the bivalves, the marine bivalves, the giant clams, can weigh up to 200 pounds, maybe up to 3 feet across, contrary to some of the pictures that you see of pearl fishers that are wandering along the bottom of the ocean and step into the giant clam and it snaps shut on them, and then they've got to sit there underwater and decide whether they're going to swim with a 200-pound clam on their foot or cut their leg off. Now, the fact is the muscles don't close quite that quickly, but I presume that makes a reasonably good story in some cases. So there are some that are large. I am of the opinion that there has undoubtedly been a general decrease, if not in species, at least in numbers, of many of these organisms for a variety of reasons. Pollution, change in environmental conditions of one kind or another. I don't know that most of them are endangered yet, but they are certainly not as prevalent as they once were. There are a few boring examples, boring in the sense of being able to bore into mud or sand. Some of these can act very quickly. Some of these shells can bury themselves almost in a split second. You can see some of them, and if you don't watch closely, they're just gone. You see them lying there on the beach, and the water comes in, all of a sudden they're gone. Widely different. There are characteristics, the bivalves, the mantle, the pumps that are present. Are consistent through the group. So there are unique characteristics for the group, but again, they are quite different from any of the other organisms that we find, and are simply a very difficult group to try and provide an evolutionary origin for.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson at bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.